Human beings have been sharing stories for hundreds of thousands of years. And with those stories came the emotional, spiritual, and physical knowledge of the ancients. Shaman Durek, a sixth generation shaman and best-selling author of Spirit Hacking, bridges the gap between science and spirituality and brings us back to our roots. He's here to bring forth the ancient wisdom of our elders, to help heal and bring happiness into our modern society. The time has come to end codependency and put the power back into people's hands. Welcome to the tribe.
Hey tribe, I'm super excited because the energy that we are bringing as Lit Leaders of Legacy is expanding and building so much power in our beings. And if you want to increase that power and take it to the next level, you gotta visit the Shaman School at shamandurek.com, because we are sharing information that is not out there and you cannot find it anywhere. And you can only find it at the Shaman School at shamandurek.com. To stay lit, lit for life. Love you. Hey tribe, are you ready to level up your energy? To remove the things that have been limiting you from your psychic abilities, your intuition, and your ability to move energies for manifestation? Well, I have the most amazing quantum technology for you. It's called the Spirit Optimizer, an optimizing energy tool that will give you the ability, as if you had your own spiritual Alexa in your pocket. Ask it and it does it. Shift and it will. Open, find, and illuminate what you have not been able to see, and transform your life in the shortest amount of time. This is an evolutionary tool for the new world and for the new you. So check out shamandurek.com. Go to the store, get into the Spirit Optimizer, the SO, and have an SO experience. Hello, Lit Leaders of Legacy. Are you enjoying the podcast as much as I have been bringing it to you so that you can grow and expand and see the potential of your being and the great power that you wield in this world? Well, I have something else for you that's going to take you to the next level of your spiritual gifts and your powers. It is the Lit Vibe Meditation app, created by my family, my beautiful niece, Natalia Alava, who graduated from the Berklee College of Music, who has composed frequencies that are selectively chosen for each meditation to open up your senses and to open up your meridians so that you can receive the energy that is coming in through the words and the channeled frequencies that I'm bringing in from the spirit world to awaken your powers. You're talking psychic abilities, intuition, ability to read energy, connecting with the spirit world in the higher realms of light, and even more than that. You're talking getting the spirit hacks right there available to you and being a part of an amazing community where you can share your ideas, your inspirations, post pictures, and get people involved in having meetups and meeting up in your local area. The Lit Vibe Meditation app is a place for you to rise your level of spiritual knowledge and energy and power in a place where you can join with other people who are doing just the same. It's about changing our lives and changing the lives of others. And it's about lifting ourselves to higher levels. The Lit Vibe Meditation app, available at Google Play and on Apple. It's a place for you to find your vibe. Join us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ancient Wisdom Today podcast. I'm Shaman Durek, and I'm super happy to be here with all of you Lit Leaders of Legacy who are bringing so much love and creativity and beautiful energies to the planet by being love ambassadors and sharing your wisdom and everything that you represent in this tribal energy as being these lit leaders of legacy. Because right now, more so than ever, it is about us getting into our awareness and our sovereignty and really standing in our in who we are so that we can shine our light as bright as we can in this world. And really being able to understand what's going on in the world, what's going on in the years, you know, really having that knowledge and really getting into the understanding of the ancient wisdom. We always talk about, you know, the different cultures and different ideas, but we also have to look at the stars and we have to look at some of the deeper meanings that are all around us. And this is how we really begin to start opening ourselves up. So I thought it would be amazing to have someone that I have a lot of respect for and someone who has been a pioneer in the area of truly understanding storytelling and astrology and Kabbalah and mysticism. We have in the studio Gal Sassoon, and he is a genius, because I can tell you one time I was sitting in his class and he said to me, "You must be Scorpio. All the Scorpios will be sitting together." And there were seven Scorpios on the back wall of his class, and it was all of us sitting next to each other. And I said, "How did he know that?" And he said, "Scorpios like to find each other." And I thought that was really cool because I've never experienced anything like that. And I, you know, through the years, I got to, you know, read his amazing book, A Wish Can Change Your Life. You know, he's been in this, whole experience for more than 20 years, and even more so than that, I would say. And he's done so much for the community. He has been, you know, his book has been translated into 8 languages. It's been endorsed by, you know, His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama. And, you know, on top of that, he's just an amazing person. You know, he contributes to community through Huffington Post, Yoga Journal, and astrology.com, and just always present to help people see how to navigate their life in the most easiest and simplest way. And so today we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. So I want to welcome to the studio, Gal Sassoon.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Toda Motek. I appreciate you being here. Okay, so I want to go right in to, you know, like the understanding of your connection to people, to oneness, to really understanding, because you're such an amazing support for society, for community, for people. And you help so many people, you know, and myself including, but also friends of mine. So tell me more about that, like this passion of yours to bring this energy forth.
I think that I always was interested in magic. I remember when I was 13 or 14. Yeah, I was in Vancouver for a year. My parents went there for to study something. And I was kind of miserable because, you know, it's a tough age. And I started seeing things and hearing things that other people can't, which is not very welcoming when you're 13, 14. Now, yeah, I want to open my third eye. I want to see things. Yeah. But when you're 13, 14, you have so much confusions already. The last thing you know is to is to see things between dimensions and so forth. But I happened to be one of those kids that did see it. And one of the things that happened, I remember I was in Eric Hamber in Vancouver in the high school there, and I was walking. I didn't have any friends besides some trees that I used to talk to over there in Vancouver. And suddenly I realized that what my ambition is when I grow up, everybody says what they want to be when they grow up. And I said, I really want to be a wizard. I don't know if there's a school for wizard. You know, it's way before Harry Potter. I think I'm talking about 81,
yeah,
82.
Of course, yeah.
You know, 81, 82. We have disco, maybe, but we didn't have Harry Potter. So I was saying, yeah, that's what I want. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I really want to be a wizard. I really want to be touching people and somehow making a knuck, a change in the way they look or the way they think or the way they walk, whatever it is. And then I studied psychology. And I didn't find it so much in psychology. I found a lot of wisdom. I found a lot of wise people. I found a lot of people that can contain other people's pain, but they were restricted. Their hands were tied or their soul was tied because they were not allowed to speak about past lifetimes, not allowed to say anything about what you should do. I understand. Yeah, but what should I do about it? And that kind of drove me crazy because I felt like I'm going to be having to always shut up as a therapist, you know, so I didn't want to do that. And then I went surfing in Mexico because my name means, in Hebrew, it means a wave. So I decided the only way to learn about myself is to learn about waves. You know, the easiest way is the waves in the ocean. So I went there and certain coincidences happened and I encountered yoga, then astrology, then Kabbalah, which is kind of interesting because it's Mexico. It's not India. Columbus made that mistake one time and thought the Indians from India. It happened to me also again because I come to Mexico. Suddenly I'm doing Indian stuff. I'm doing Kundalini yoga. And then from that, I somehow got into astrology and Kabbalah, learning Kabbalah, not from Jews in Israel, but from Christians in Mexico. And that what taught me that everything is connected, that there is no such thing as Jewish Kabbalah or Vedic yogi or whatever. Everything is mixed. Everything is kind of coming together to that oneness, that convergence that everybody was talking about as the age of Aquarius, because Aquarius is all about humanity and oneness. So then I've realized that through astrology, I have a better tool, not because I can, you know, impress people by guessing their sign or whatever, or telling what's going to happen in the future. It's more about helping people tap into who they are, what was going on in the past, tracing patterns, and then realizing, hey, guys, there is a trend here. Be aware of it. You can actually go on the other side. You can do this. You can do that. There is some options there. So I found that astrology is a very powerful tool for synchronicities because now I declare myself as a hunter of synchronicities. What fascinates me is coincidences. These are the moments when I feel magic, when I feel that oneness coming together. And then when I studied about Carl Jung, for example, the great psychologist, he was an astrologer. I didn't know that. And that's why Freud kicked him out of the psychoanalysis society because he was terrified from mystics, you know, at that time. And besides, you know, Freud is a Taurus and Leo and Jung was a Leo. Leo and Taurus, very difficult energy. But what I've learned from Jung is that his whole idea about synchronicities, coincidence, meaningful coincidences, he called them, and archetypes, he drew from astrology. Of course, we have 12 archetypes in astrology, 12 signs, and synchronicities, well, as above, so below. Whatever is happening up there, we have a very powerful new moon coming on March 10, then it's also happening here. It's not because of the new moon in Pisces, you're going to suddenly be deeper in your meditation. It is correlated. It is happening at the same time. It's synchronized. So whatever is going to happen to you on Friday that relates to Pisces is synchronized with the fact that the moon is in Pisces. If it's Mercury retrograde, you're not late because Mercury is retrograde. You're late and Mercury is retrograde. They're together in a sense. They're co-authors. You know, you are co-creator in this universe. So yes. That led me to astrology, to Kabbalah. And I've realized that they're all connected. Now I'm doing also a class on tarot that I'm teaching. Tarot are also, the tarot cards are connected, numerology. They're all intertwined. The minute you go one path, you suddenly see that all other paths converge.
You know, it's very true what you say. And, you know, I know for me being a sixth generation shaman, I never got into astrology. And I think it's just because I think that it takes a certain type of mind. But I did go and look and live in different countries around the world and study different religions and different cultures of thought, you know, and theology and so forth. And what I thought was very fascinating is that exactly what you said, they are all connected. And it's about finding that the beautiful vein in that connection, you know? And that's what I look for in people is to see if they are able to see that golden thread that moves through all of those energies and then how it relates to us in our lives individually and how it relates to our lives in community. And, you know, you were saying about, you know, learning Kabbalah in Mexico. And then that in itself is such a contradiction, but also amazing too, right? Because people always create these ideas of, you know, well, you go to India for this, you go to Mexico for this, you go to Israel for this, you go to, you know, Bali for this. And really realizing that all of the world's knowledge and teaching can be in different places of the world and not where you expect it to be. So that is really powerful. And I love what you said about connecting to the wave and to the ocean, being the fact that that's how you say your name, because that is also connecting to yourself as well in this very powerful and potent way of my name means this. So I'm going to go connect to the thing that my name means. And I think that's so beautiful. And the energy of that and what that brings on a deeper level for you. So it's beautiful. So when you got into all of these things, what was the thing for you that made you choose astrology as the, would you say astrology is the base, or would you say that there's a different base that you spend more energy into?
I think that astrology, because that's what I do most day. I do charts on astrology every year. I write a book on astrology for the next year. So astrology is definitely the base, the home base.
Okay, yeah,
but, you know, people ask me, what astrology book are you reading lately? And I don't know. I don't think I read any astrology book lately, but I'm reading one book now, which is about Bitcoins. And suddenly I find astrology in Bitcoins. Because, you know, I'm reading in the book and the book says, you know, there is most likely that money or trade with gifts was before language. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, in astrology, gifts, money, currency is ruled by Taurus. Language is ruled by Gemini. Yeah, Taurus comes before Gemini. And then I've realized that the order of the signs is so significant. First come Aries, which is I am. You find your identity. Then comes Taurus. Okay. Great. You have a name. You have an identity. What is your gift? That's your real value. Value is not how much you're worth in the bank, because the bank can be burned tomorrow. Your value is your talents, because your talent is what's going to make you money, or what you're going to be able to trade, because you do this very well. You're a shaman. I need some healing. Oh, you need something from the future. Maybe I can come get it for you because I'm an astrologer. We're trading our gifts.
Yes.
And then came language. That's why chimpanzees that don't have a language still trade. When they did some research with monkeys and they connected their, for chimps, like a banana with a token, like we have Bitcoin as a token, they started fighting over the tokens, not over the banana. So they've realized the idea of money. They haven't realized yet the idea of language. And then when we had language, we could speak to each other instead of beating each other up. And then suddenly we have family. What is family? Cancer, the sign after. So what I'm trying to say is that I don't read books about astrology because I think I have the language, the same way that you are not reading books about English now. You speak English, so you're going to read books that are written in English. So I'm trying to read astrology in books about politics and about economy and about mythology. And I'm reading now Bulgakov's Dog's Heart, which is an amazing book. I find astrology there. You know, it is remarkable, the minute you are tapping into any system of symbolism, if it's a true system of symbolism, you don't have to focus on it. Because if it is describing the world, you can focus on the world and you'll see astrology there. You know, and that's my attitude towards astrology, because I'm interested in so many topics that just burying myself in astrology would have been a waste of my time and a waste of other people's time, because there's other people that do that. And my job, I think, as somebody who loves synchronicities, is to connect all of those things together so that people can see the beauty in life, not necessarily the beauty in astrology.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I think that it's really about being fully integrated in like what it is you are. And you said it exactly right. You're reading a book, but you find astrology in it. I'm the same way. I could read a book, I could listen to a poem, I can hear someone tell me a story, and I see all the shamanic principles within the thing that they're speaking about and how to even decipher it for them to, so they can see what they're actually really saying, you know. And it, I think that's beautiful, because also that is the true mysticism, right? That's the mystic, you know, because the mystic is that part of the self that is able to see the translation that is hidden within every subtext of life, right? And then being able to bring that information forward and how it makes sense for someone to be able to understand it. And that's one of the things I beautifully love about you, is how your mind operates. I love people with very sharp minds and very, very, very smart minds. You know, so one of the, you were getting somewhere. I wanted to go back to it because it was so juicy. So, and also I remember when I was living in Israel, isn't the Aleph the also representation of the Aries? It's the, right? Isn't that right? It's like the breath of God. The first.
Yeah, Aries is the firstborn. So I always like to look at astrology as, imagine there is a god and a goddess. You know, of course there is none, yeah, but let's imagine the oneness is represented by yin yang, you know, like masculine, feminine. So let's call him god and goddess. And they have 12 children. And the firstborn is Aries. And he behaves like a firstborn. The key word for Aries is I am. because there's nobody besides me. And God and Goddess is giving me all their love. So think about Muhammad and think about Jesus and think about Moses. They're Aries, you know, and they're all fascinated by oneness because in many ways, there's nothing around. There's no other kids running around. And I'm always with the adults. They treat me very nicely. You know, they're young parents, so of course they make mistakes, you know, even as God is Goddess. But still, I'm fighter, I'm a warrior, I'm a man, you know, because the first one is Aries, it's a boy. The second one is Taurus. And the Taurus energy is interesting because she's a girl and she has an older brother called Aries. So the way she is that she's influenced by Aries because she's not alone anymore. But she's the first girl and everybody pamper her. And that's why Aries is all about, you know, money and talents and things, you know, everybody buy her things and everything because she's the first girl. Now, Aries is kind of like, I don't like this so much. But in the other sense, I have somebody to protect, which is the most important thing for Aries. Now, think about Taurus. Taurus is not Taurus alone. The same way that if you're a second born, you're not alone. You have to deal with your brother. Sometimes test to see how when you're going to cry and tries to see to pull out the hand when it's going to get out. You know what I mean? Like you have to be experimented by. Then come Gemini and think about Gemini. Now he has to deal with an older sister who is really, really kind of like stubborn and an older brother who's kind of aggressive. So Gemini learns to be a communicator, a talker because he needs to deal with these other two crazy siblings. And so it goes on with the zodiac until you get to the end, which is Pisces, the sign of mysticism that has a little bit, like you said, with every one of the archetypes. So why is Pisces so confused? Pisces, again, is mysticism because it has a little bit of the warrior from Aries and the peacemaker from Libra. He has a little bit about the one that wants to be at home from Cancer and the wants to be outside from Aquarius. So he has a little bit, or she actually, it's a feminine side, has a little bit of everything. That's why Pisces are multi-talented. And here comes the mystic, because the mystic job is to go inside and to bring out a little piece of every one of the archetypes in order to get enlightened, in order to get balanced, and then move on to the next level. So in many ways, yes, what we are supposed to do as mystic is look for the hidden part. And what is the hidden part? According to Kabbalah, God is the ultimate giver.
Yes.
And then when God is alone, because God is everything that is, and there is nothing besides God, he has nobody to give to. I'm saying he, but it could be she, it could be it. So what God did, God created us as a vessel. And what would be the ultimate goodness to give to this vessel? If God is everything that is good, what God wants to give is God's self, because that's the ultimate good. But can we receive that God self, God energy? It's like a cup trying to contain the ocean. It's impossible. So that's where the mystic comes. It's almost like the mystic is a zip file that wants to take the oneness and kind of download it. And then slowly throughout your life, throughout your reincarnation, you extract the godly aspect of you. That's why in Kundalini Yoga, they talk about the rising of the Kundalini, you know, because your job is to awaken that mystic inside of you. And everybody has the embassy of God inside of them. It's just that some people just close it or bury it with pragmatism or whatever you want to call it, materialism, whatever.
Yeah.
But all of us are divine. That's why all of us are Neo.
Right. That's what I say all the time. I really love the way you think. I tell you that. I'm going to say it 1,000 times if I have to. Because literally in shamanism, we have this belief. The shamanism is about creating relationships with everything from your ancestors to food, to your body, to your community, to you name it, to spirit, to you, to all of it.
From nature.
And the idea of the awareness of that is that we're all Neos, right? And it's this complete amazing awareness of the self through those relationships. And what I thought was very interesting is that, you know, we are at this very amazing time to be alive on planet Earth because of the amazing shifts that are taking place for higher consciousness to fully move in a faster pace and the collective, you know, being able to really start increasing their you know, acuity, their intuition, their capacity for a higher consciousness. What do you feel in this year based on astrology? What is your forecast from Gaul himself?
Well, you know, I wrote a whole book about it because it's a lot. I think
what's the name of the book so everyone knows?
The Astrology of 2024. It's very self-evident. Yes. But I call it the subtitle of the year, because every year I like to call the year a certain name. So this year is the once and future year, because what's happening this year, which is very significant, Pluto, which is the energy of power, riches, it's the ruler of Scorpio, by the way. It's considered to be the furthest planet we have in the solar system. Therefore, it is the edge. It's the border. Beyond that, the monsters lurk. We don't know what's going on. So it's the edge of our solar system. That's why we gave it to Scorpio. You know, only they can deal with the unknown, with the mysterious. Pluto is moving for the first time in 250 years into Aquarius. Now, the thing is, because it's such a slow planet, because it's so far away, it goes in and out of Capricorn, Aquarius, Capricorn, Aquarius. So, for example, Pluto moved into Capricorn in 2008. And everybody thinks, yeah, it's the recession. It was a time that we had to re-examine all of the institution of finance. But not a lot of people know that it's also the time that Bitcoin was conceived. You know, that's because I'm reading this book now. So Pluto, power, money, riches, moves into Capricorn. Bang, we have the big recession. Lehman Brothers fall. Bitcoin is born, almost out of the ashes. Now we're moving towards 2000 and now we're in 2024. Pluto is moving now to another sign, to the next sign, Aquarius. Last time Pluto was in Aquarius was in the French Revolution. The Industrial Revolution, the American the Constitution was signed. So it was a very monumental time, the end of the 18th century, and we're back to that same place, because that's what astrology does. It takes us back to the same place we were last time the cycle was happening. So this year, we're moving back and forth between past and future, old and new, traditional and rebellion. So there's going to be a lot of revolution, a lot of unexpected things this year. And especially we have to watch it when Pluto moves last time to Capricorn, which is going to be September, October, November, which happens to be when the American are going to have their, elections, which is worrying.
Elections, yeah.
The other thing that's happening this year, which is interesting because I've been talking about this year as the year of democracy, because Pluto is going to move into Aquarius and Aquarius is democracy. Imagine the French Revolution last time Pluto was there, is that 4.2 billion people are going to election this year. It's never happened on the history of humanity that half of the people on this planet are going to go to vote. Now, a lot of these places is not really voting, like Russia, you know, but still, yeah. It's an interesting time that there could be change in where we are, in UK, United States, India, you know, Afghanistan, not Afghanistan, Bangladesh, you know, there's so many other countries, Indonesia, that are going through this transition right now, which again, is allowing the people to make their voice. The other thing is Saturn in Pisces. We mentioned Pisces quite a lot, that it's the mystic. And people are interested in it. Saturn in Pisces happens every 30 years, and it means that it's grounding your mystical energies. Your meditations are going to be longer. Your dreams are going to be more prophetic. Your insights are going to be right on. So there's going to be much more focus on mysticism and intuition this year.
That's amazing. Now, my question is this, is going off, because, you know, I always get this kind of like superstitious thing. Every time I tell someone I'm a Scorpio, they go, ooh, you know? And then when I read like what's on TikTok and what's on all these social media sites about Scorpio, it doesn't relate to me on an energetic level. And then I talk to my Scorpio friends and it doesn't relate to them either. It always says that we're jealous. I don't have a jealous bone in my body. It says that we're vindictive. I have no need to be vindictive. I love humanity. And if people make mistakes, I'm like, okay, well, you're here to grow. So that's why you're here to evolve. That's the whole purpose of life. And, you know, continue loving you and supporting you in that way to hold that space for you. So it says all of these things that I don't feel as a Scorpio, but they keep saying it in astrology. Why is that?
Because, you know, people ask me, what is the worst sign? And I always tell them, Scorpio. No doubt. What is the best sign? Scorpio, no doubt. And people get like, I don't get it. Well, Scorpio, you know, when I was reading books on astrology and when I was just beginning, the keywords are the most important. We mentioned Aries, I am. Taurus, I have. Gemini, I think. Cancer, I feel. Leo, I will. Virgo, I serve. Libra, I balance. Scorpio. Scorpio in most of the book will say, I desire. I don't like that keyword because according to the Lord Buddha, desire is the source of suffering. And I don't think Scorpio is the source of suffering. Therefore, I don't think Scorpio is about the desire, the sex only. Because then, yes, you're jealous. And yes, you're vindicative because you don't have sex with me. Now I hate you. You know what I mean? That's the Scorpio that some people that I think are more terrified from Scorpios write. Then I changed it in my book to I Transform. Because what Scorpio really talks about is transformation. My feeling is that Scorpio is the only sign that can reincarnate without dying. Meaning that you can start off as a criminal and end up as a saint. Now, because Scorpio is the sign of transformation, everything that Scorpio rules causes transformation. For example, sex. Yeah, it transforms. You can die from it if you've got a sickness, and you can get pregnant from it. You know, it's another kind of sickness. But then you have death is ruled by Scorpio. Of course, Scorpio, death is transformation. Intimacy transforms you. Therapy transforms you. Magic, witchcraft. Well, witchcraft transforms you. You know, so the whole thing about Scorpio is that most likely you and your friends belong to the third tier of Scorpio. All Scorpios start off as Scorpios. They sting without a reason. They're literally the animal Scorpio. 10% of them end up being serpents. Serpents are a sign of wisdom, but also evil. You know what I mean? So they can go back and forth. 1% are considered to be the phoenix, the eagles. And those are the highest manifestation of Scorpio. So probably you and your friends are like, what are you talking about jealousy? I'm not jealous. Yeah, because you're a phoenix. When you were a Scorpio, when you were a serpent, maybe you were. Maybe you were possessive, you know? Maybe you were jealous. Maybe you were vindicative. But as a phoenix, you know what they say about the phoenix? That the tears of the phoenix can heal any affliction. For me, it's a metaphor that if you are able to make your therapist cry, because their therapist heard all the shit out there all day long, but if you made him cry, my God, you're already healed, because you probably talked in such sincerity and authenticity that even your therapist, who's supposed to be careful of countertransference, what Freud called, is crying. And those tears heal you, you know? So that's how I view Scorpios. So yes, there are a lot of Scorpios that are vindicative. That's why some astrologers that are very, let's say, superficial say Scorpio equals vindicative. No, it's not. It depends what kind of Scorpio.
Wow, that's so different, because I do feel, yeah, when I was younger, I was much more like what you said, like not vindictive, but more like combative. And then as I got older and I died in my late 20s and so forth. And came back, was in a wheelchair for 2 years, the whole bit, anything. And I'm going to go into that whole thing. But literally, it shifted my whole view on everything. And you're right. I if someone is in session with me and they get me to an emotional place, I notice that my energy starts to get brighter. Like I get brighter. And I would definitely say I'm definitely not the snake. I'm definitely not the vindictive or jealous type at all. Because I want people to have their own space, their own sovereignty, their own energy to be able to see how amazing they are and what a gift they are. So I'm always making sure people know that it's not about me. It's about you and how I can hold space for you and mm-hmm. show up with that level of awareness and love towards humanity. So that makes great sense. So you're saying every sign, and I like what you said about transform.
Wait, we have to finish for the rest of the people. Sagittarius is I see or I know. No, actually, I see is a little bit better. For Capricorn is I use. For Aquarius is I know. And for Pisces is I believe. Or actually, I imagine is better.
Wow. And my manager, who's my niece, Alexandra, she sees everything. She's very psychic. She always tells me, I see this, uncle. I see this, uncle. I see this. I see that. And then, what is Cancer?
I feel.
And Virgo?
I serve.
Wow. And all of this is in your book? Is that all?
Yeah.
It's in your
yeah,
book?
Every book, every year I mention it, because for me, it's like your code to get into the archetype. That's the only thing you need to know about the archetype. You know, it's like we said. It's the key word. It's the key to get to connect to the sign. You know, you need to get along with the Virgo, serve them, help them serve. You know that Virgo is all about diet and health. So go to a restaurant that's healthy. You know, it's a very humble sign. So it's not a sign that needs too much. It's a sign that needs a mission. You know that you're with a Cancer. You want to feel. You want to say, I feel that we should go see that movie instead of I think we should go see the movie, because that can open up the cancer much more. But to a Gemini who is I think, you should say, I think that that dress doesn't work with your shoes, instead of I feel. Because if you say that to Gemini, the Gemini will say, what do you mean you feel? What, my shoes are making you feel? What do you mean you feel? You know, but the other sense, that if you know how to speak with every sign, that's why I think that astrology is really about compassion. If you know that Aries are always afraid they're not going to be recognized, that they're going to die before they're going to make their mission happen, which is Christ, which is Moses, then you just give them a reinforcement. They're a fire sign and they need air, Aries oxygen, Aries words. So say some nice thing to them. If you know that Leo is very childish, okay, yes, they're childish. So try to behave more as an adult next to them. Or try to have fun with them. So the more you know about the signs, you can have more compassion towards them and get much more collaboration and cooperation from them.
Wow, this is so beautiful. And because I never even thought of it that way. Okay, so then if I was to say to you, my fiance, who is a Virgo, she's on September 22nd, and I'm Scorpio on November 17th.
And September 22nd is on the border. She's really on the border. When okay. you're on the border of two signs, you're like being born, I don't know, by the border with Mexico. So you speak Spanish most likely. You eat tacos much more than people that may be in Nebraska. you know, and you're very influenced by whatever's happening in Mexico. So if an atom bomb falls in Mexico, it's not going to stop by the border and say, we're not bombing San Diego. That makes sense. So you're going to have some of the leftovers. So she's born right between Libra, which is beauty, relationship, diplomacy, and Virgo, which is about service. So what does that mean? You have to weave those two things together because you decided to be born on the border. It means I need to serve Virgo through beauty. I need to pay attention to small details, Virgo, in my diplomacy, Libra. You know, I need to serve or be served, Virgo, in my relationship, Libra. So that's how you put it. It's like almost like equations of archetypes.
And that's exactly how she is. She's the princess of Norway. So she's got her very diplomacy side. So times when we're dealing with the press or we have things that we have to say and to the press, she always sits me down and we do like, you know, okay, this is how we're going to handle it. She's like, this is what you're going to do. Here's what you're going
to say. Pay attention to the details. Yeah, don't say this. You know, Virgo is all about, no, you don't say this. Yeah, you can say that, but be careful of this. Pay attention to that. It's like the super nanny.
Yes, yes, that's exactly. And so what does that look like for our relationship? I'm wondering because I want the viewers at home to hear because they're very in tune to our relationship.
You know, Virgo and Scorpio, we always go, when you have a relationship, always go to the elements. Elements really work well for us. So there's water. Water is Pisces, Scorpio, and Cancer. There is air, Gemini, Libra, Aquarius. There's earth, Virgo, Capricorn, Taurus. There is fire, Leo, Sagittarius, Aries. Okay, so fire and air work really well together, even in alchemy. If you need a candle and you put a glass on top of it and it has no oxygen, it will die because it gets extinguished. Water needs earth. That's how we create gardens. So if you're a water sign and an earth sign, or a water sign and a water sign and an air sign and an earth sign, you get along very well. You belong to the same troop. So she represents the Holy Grail. You represents the holy water. So together, you are very well together. Cups love wine and wine loves cups. Okay. If you are a fire and a water, it's a little bit more dynamic and there's a little bit more conflict because the water puts out the fire. Okay. So water and earth goes very well together. Earth and earth, fire and water, the same way that fire and earth sign get along very well, fire sign with fire sign, air sign with air sign. So when you are a water sign, like a Scorpio, and she's a Virgo, she needs to represent the path, the direction, the rails. You are supposed to bring the essence. You know, the Buddha talked about in the Heart Sutra how form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And what he's trying to say is you represents the emptiness, the spirit, the essence. She's supposed to represent the more earthly things, okay? The more grounded things. So she will take maybe care more of the schedule and the routine and the mission and the work. You're supposed to bring the magic, the transformation, the passion, the intimacy. And if each one of you are accepting the gift of the other and willing to give it to the other, then it will work really well, especially because it's water and earth.
That's amazing. I never heard anyone say that before, Gal.
Because it's very simple, especially for your listeners to just immediately check to see what's going on with their relationship and how to fix it.
Yeah, because it's alchemy. And that just never dawned on me how to think about that from a level of the signs and how we come together. Because you're right, because my sister is Virgo and my fiance is Virgo, and we get along so well. But for some reason, I don't get along really well. I had a manager once who was an Aries, and she felt like I was always in the public eye. And she was always saying to me, oh, I don't feel like I'm getting enough attention. I don't feel like I'm getting enough.
Yeah, but you see, because you're water, you're supposed to flow to the lowest place, which a lot of time talks about underneath the earth. And I'm an Aries. I'm a fire sign. I need to be seen. Remember, the key word is I am. And whenever I'm with you, you're always out there. You're always being seen. You're always being giving the attention. You're getting what I'm supposed to get. And next to you, I don't feel comfortable because you're a water sign and you're a water bender and you're getting all the attention when I'm a fire bender and I'm not getting any. So it can't work. You know, if you really wanted to work on that, I would have to tell you, okay, I have here my wife. Can you come, please? My wife is really an accountant, and she's the accountant of football players, and she's really funny. She has a story she wants to share with you. I don't know if that's what you really wanted to do, but if you would have come to me, I would tell you, listen, you have to make her feel special because his keyword is I am, you know?
Right, yeah.
But I agree.
We ended up, you know, going our own ways. Mm-hmm. Because she kept feeling like I was doing my thing. But, you know, I find now listening to what you're saying, I'm starting to piece together. So how are two Scorpios as friends together?
You know, I believe that if you belong to the same sign, you belong to the same tribe. It works. We know our issues. We know what is difficult. Obviously, it's not balanced because you're both Scorpio, so there's so much water around you, you know. But you also are not alone in your Scorpio-ness. In your chart, you have each one of the signs. People don't get it. Astrology is ruled by Aquarius. Aquarius is the sign of democracy. And it took me a while to understand that. First of all, of course, I read a book about Alexander the Great. And then in Alexander the Great, I realized that he brought astrology from, he actually brought it from Greece. Aristo was his teacher, all the way to India. And that's why a lot of the signs names in India are derived from Greece. So what happened was that he also democratized astrology, because before that in Babylon, astrology was only used for the kings and that's it. When it came to Greece, suddenly everybody wants to have their chart. And like AI, the more information and data come to astrology, the more it can fix itself. No, Mars is not about friendship. Mars is about war. Oh, really? With Babylon, I thought it was... No. We tested it now on 20,000 Greek. It means war. So it corrected itself, in a sense, during the time of Greece. And people don't understand that it's not only that the astrology democratized itself. I didn't understand it for a while. Now I realize that in your own chart, there is a democracy of the planets and the signs. It means that even though your sun was in Scorpio when you were born, your chart is round and there is 12 houses, which are areas in your life where these planets interact. And every house is ruled by a different sign because it's a circle. So there is no person on this planet that doesn't have a Scorpio. Every one of your listeners have Scorpio in their sign. Maybe they have it in the house of relationship and they're attracted to Scorpios. Maybe they have it in the rising sign and they didn't even know that they're walking the path of Scorpio. Maybe their moon is in Scorpio. Maybe their house of career is ruled by Scorpio. So to be successful in their career, they need to be a shaman. So what I'm trying to say is that you have, let's say, a Scorpio friend. That friend activates that Scorpio in you and you activate their Scorpio. If you guys are happy with your Scorpios, it's great. But if you're not comfortable with your Scorpio, let's imagine you're in the closet and you really are sexually attracted to women, but you're trying to be with the men because of your mother and your father, and you're a Scorpio. That's a problem. So when you're dealing with another Scorpio, she might not be very easy to get along with because her sexuality, which is all about Scorpio, is being repressed by her or by other people. Therefore, mm-hmm. I don't like Scorpios. I don't want to be around Scorpios because it brings up that. But if you are happy about yourself and happy about your sign, it's the same thing with not even with signs, with people. If you don't like yourself, you're not easy to get along with. If you like yourself, I'm not talking about narcissistic people because that's a disease.
Yeah, of course.
Then you're easy to get along with. So if you're happy with your Scorpio-ness, you'll be very good with another Scorpio. If you're happy with your Aries, you'll be great with Aries. If you're a Taurus and you're happy with your Taurus, let the Taurus come. I'm happy. And the interesting thing also in astrology that I noticed lately is that people ask me, I meet all these Cancers all the time. What does it mean? Well, look in your chart, see what house you have Cancer. You'll see that these people come to shine that house. Maybe it's time to make money and your Cancer is ruling your house of money. Suddenly it changes and all your friends are Scorpio. Okay, now you have Scorpio friends coming to teach you about the Scorpio inside of you. And it's time to learn to speak Scorpio. Make sense?
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So I'm a Scorpio in my sign. In Venus, in Mars, and South Node.
So there's definitely quite a lot of Scorpio. Now, the South Node presents what you need to let go of because you've done it many lifetimes. That means that you were a Scorpio many lifetimes. And in this lifetime, you have to kind of navigate it a little bit more carefully. Don't be too much Scorpio. Be a little bit more like a Taurus. Sensuality, design, art, voice, music. It's fashion, you know, good food. So you're not trying to be a Scorpio. You're moving towards the Taurus, which is the opposite sign, and being a little bit more like a Taurus in order to handle that Scorpio energy. You know, that's why I always tell people you have a lot of Libra, then you have to balance it with the opposite sign, Aries. You have in your chart a lot of Cancer. You have to balance it with the opposite sign, Capricorn.
Is this your tikkun? Because I
in many ways,
you mentioned stuff to me back in the days about the tikkun, and that also connects to the signs.
Yeah, tikkun basically,
a little bit about that.
Tikkun in Hebrew means to fix, to rectify. And the biggest aspect in astrology, it's almost like burning karma, being barred karma, is that God left the universe broken or not completely fixed, or let's say not completely done. He left a few things not done. Not because he was hurried to go to someplace else, but because he felt, she, whatever, that imbuing us with the ability to create will need some parts of the creation not created so we can come in and create, practice being God. You know,
we that's why that in communism as well. Yes.
Yeah, totally. Because that's your creativity. What is your creativity? Creativity is mimicking God, imitatio Dei, like being like God. So that's why creators are so important. That's why when you say in the end of your prayer, Amen, Amen in Hebrew means to believe, but it also has the same root as Oman, artist. Because only artists are really working the God's work, not the priests, not the rabbis, you know. So the whole thing about tikkun is, how can I help humanity fix the broken creation so that I can practice Godhood? And everybody has a problem. Everybody is imperfect. Everybody has an issue. Everybody has a dark side, blah, blah, blah. Those are the things that we came to fix. And a lot of time in the chart, Saturn can represent your difficulties, your challenges, your antagonist, and how you can fix it. And the South Node represents what you've already done in a past lifetime, and you have to let it be. That's why I told you you're a Scorpio. And focus on the North Node, which you have in Taurus, which is what you need to focus on.
I see. Wow. Oh my goodness. You are a plethora of information, Gal.
Absolutely
wonderful. I can't wait to book an appointment with you. And I encourage other people who are listening all around the world to also do the same. It's absolutely phenomenal, the amount of information, the clarity, and just the ability to draw information from one point of understanding to another point of understanding, and how they correlate and come back together to create an awareness of the whole picture versus just the small, tiny keyhole you're looking in and making reactions to and decisions from, right? What do you feel in this year is the thing that is so prominently showing in astrology for us that we have to grow through?
I think that Saturn in Pisces, because remember we talked about Saturn is the tikkun, the fixer.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's in Pisces until February of 2026, started last March, and not this March, but a March ago, so it's a year already, we need to fix our dependency and codependency. We need to fix our addictions, our lack of boundaries. We need to really fix our self-destructiveness. You know, again, it drove me crazy. Why is Pisces the sign of suicides? Why is the Pisces the sign of addiction? And then they tell us it's the sign of enlightenment and mysticism. I mean, what's going on? And then it dawned on me because I asked myself a lot of questions, which I can't answer. But then after a few years or after a few weeks, suddenly it comes, you know, and the answer came very clearly. If you want to be a mystic, what all the mystics tell us, you have to kill your ego. You have to let go of your ego. You have to stop being yourself. Even the Lord Buddha, the third temptation, was dealing with his ego. Okay, so that's the self-destructiveness. It's not about committing suicide. It's not about drinking yourself to death. It's not about doing, I don't know, Tina, whatever. I think what it means is that you need to self-destruct the ego in order to join that oneness. Now, if you're not ready to be a Pisces that can kill his ego, you start killing yourself. And also, it's the time, I mean, remember we talked about Pisces being so confusing, and so because he's everything and she's all the signs together, that's why it's tough to be a Pisces, but it's the sign that gives you the ability to go to the next level, to empathy, to compassion, to the highest manifestations of emotions and imagination. Think about it. Imagination is the highest thing we can. That's why Pisces, I imagine. So my feeling is that this year we have to work with our self-destructiveness, that we might encounter the way by which we destroy ourselves. If it's bad relationships, attracting people that makes us miserable? Is it food? Is it drugs? Is it alcohol? Is it your work? Is it your fears? Whatever is in your securities, that's what we need to fix this year.
I see it and I understand exactly what you're saying. Because one of the things that has been coming up the most when I'm seeing people is everything you just said. And it's so 100% on point. And I think, you know, for me, when I was very young, I was the type of person who, when there was like a monster in my closet or something under my bed, instead of like being scared of it, I decided to like go talk to it and mm-hmm. find out like, what are you? What's your origin? Where are you from? Why are you there? I know you're there. Even though my parents may say I'm making it up, I know you're there, so why? And then I started learning about the spirits. And then later on, my family told me that I was a spirit shaman in my culture of Yoruba and my roots that go back in my family bloodline. But the energy of that was really about paying attention to the frequencies and the energies that are moving through like this river that I see all the time through life, right? And the codes within that river that are connecting with certain people and other people getting different codes. Do you feel that astrology is a form of a code that is being written by the gods? Like, how do you feel? I don't know if you get what I'm saying, but I think you do because you see in many different ways that it's like a code to give us some aspect of understanding, maybe a map to say. What is your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that astrology, I think, and I maybe quote Jung a little bit about it, because Jung saw astrology as a system of symbolism. So it's not necessarily that, like I told you, because your sun is here, you're like that. It's an exercise of oneness, astrology. And what is oneness? Oneness means that everything is part of the one. That's why people can read tea leaves and coffee, and they can read tarot, and they can read, you know, people read livers and flights of birds and shells, if I talk about Yoruba.
Yeah,
I can read all that. The idea is that everything is connected. that everything is part of the one. And if you're able to use an instrument of your choice, whatever it is, to tap into that oneness, you have access to information, you have access to that oneness. The thing about astrology is that it's a symbol, a system that has developed for thousands of years by people all the way from India to Portugal, okay? And the north, Norway, down to, let's say, sub-Sahara even. Okay, so we're talking about a large group of people for thousands of years studying astrology. So what it means? It means that all of their understanding of the oneness was poured into that system, and the system corrected itself. You know, like AI. It's funny because AI is basically showing us how we are instead of the other way around. So like AI, it has has a process of correction.
Say that again. Say that again. Yeah, I want people to know that. That's so true.
No, you listen, there was this research now that came out with the prompts that the more you say please and thank you to the chatbot, the more truthful answers you get. I mean, this is crazy because everything is connected. And the AI, which is our child, it's literally our child, is learning from us how to behave. So the same thing, I think, with the idea of astrology. So astrology corrected itself over the centuries. And how did it do it? I'm going to predict tomorrow is going to be rain. Oh, it's nice and sunny. Okay, why did you say it's going to rain? Because the sun was conjunct to Jupiter. Okay, sun conjunct to Jupiter does not mean rain anymore. Erase it. Does that make sense? So it started correcting itself over the year. And that's why I call it the evolutionary proof of astrology. Astrology doesn't have scientific proof. But what it does have is a lot of astrology for all of these thousands of years of people using it, and it worked. Otherwise, they wouldn't go and pay money to the astrologer or read books about astrology or dedicate their life to study astrology if it doesn't work. So that is why I think astrology is, it's not like creation put that program, almost like the iPhone placed an app in you. It is one original way to connect the above and the below. And you know, as a shaman, you know that there is many other ways that you can do it.
Yes,
and that's why you go to a shaman, you go to astrologer, you go to a masseuse, you go to an acupuncturist, because every system got a glimpse of light. No one system could contain all the light. That's why I always tell people, you know, the Jews were chosen for one thing. The Mexican were chosen to another thing. The Nigerian were chosen to another thing. The Indians were chosen. Because why? Because when the light came to the planet, there was no one tribe or one people that can contain all that light. Because that light is infinite.
Wow, God, I love you.
So that's why we had to have little embassies, the Yoruba embassy, the Jerusalem embassy, the Rome embassy. The only problem with these embassies, they started saying, wait, we're the only one. You're all bullshit. Exactly. And then they started fighting. And then they brought darkness. And then the rest is history.
Yes, I love you. You're amazing. Because in shamanism, the thing I always tell people that I've gotten when I was young, when I first started training, was that when I went to Israel, to live in Israel for 4 years, I went to the Wailing Wall and I said, God, show me why, what is this, like with the people? And God showed me that there is a light code in every person, in every culture that has a specific thing that they're capable of doing and emitting. And when everyone stops fighting and stops judging and stops looking to be dominant over someone else, and they actually shine the light of that truth into each other, then the light source of all those lights will reveal the bridge that takes us into another dimension. And so when I hear it in the New Age communities, I hear the constant thing of ascension. A lot of times people are saying, oh, they think they're just going to ascend because they're talking to ETs and doing light language and all these type of things. And I'm saying, that's not what I believe it to be. And that's okay if you want to believe that. But I believe that ascension is all of us being able to see that light in us and to shine it without fear, without worry, without anything, to true liberation. True liberation, and everyone shines that light. And then the bridge is being able to see, but I believe the bridge is in the invisible to become, when the light shines, that it becomes the tangible to show us how to move into the next dimension, to code us into the next dimension of the universe. And that's what I believe ascension is. It's not just lifting us, but it's lifting the darkness back into light. It's the grand alchemy. And so
that's the tikkun. That's the fixing.
Yeah,
I agree.
I love that. That's why I love what you say. Like when you talk, I get lit because my energy just goes, you know, like my guides, my ancestors, and everyone's in the room right now, like cheering this conversation on because of the power and energy that is actually, there's a whole language happening behind this conversation that's going into the consciousness of all those who are listening worldwide. And that's why I was so much wanting to get you on this podcast, because I knew that this was going to happen, and that this level of information that goes beyond the information that's hidden behind the information is going to go into the subconscious and communicate to the cells of the people who are listening for deeper remembrance. And I really appreciate you. And I just want to take that moment to just acknowledge you and acknowledge all the years and all the time and all the playfulness and all the study and all the energies that you've created to be who you are. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You see, I'm in Aries. I need to hear that. Oh my God, I need to hear it. Otherwise, I'm going to jump out. You know, yeah, I'm in Aries.
Would love being around me because I love to edify people.
But the thing is, what you talked about is interesting, because in Judaism, there is the concept of the Messiah. Yeah, also in Christianity, obviously, because it's coming out of there. And there was a show they made, I remember, a few years ago about the Messiah. They interviewed me, and I was a party pooper in that sense, because I said, take your Messiah and send him away if he comes. I don't want him here. I don't want a person to come or whatever it is and touch me, and then I'm ascended. But I don't deserve it. It's like taking LSD and seeing God and then saying you're enlightened. You're not enlightened. You took LSD, which is totally fine. I'm totally fine. I used to take LSD in the past also. It's a great feeling.
I wouldn't
call myself enlightened after that. Does that make sense? And
yeah.
this whole idea of bodhisattva, for example, which gave me goosebumps the first time I heard about it. You know, the bodhisattva idea in Buddhism is that there are people who are ascended to the point of enlightenment, but they say right at the last moment, don't turn on the light. How could I get enlightened and escape this place, ascend upwards, while the rest of the people here are struggling? Not only that, I'm a good person. Why would I live and leave the more difficult people here, the proportions of evil people, higher because a good person get enlightened and ran away? So I committed myself to the bodhisattva's movement. Not that I'm a bodhisattva, I'm very far from it. But I'm saying, I'm not going to get enlightened and escape. I want to be a bodhisattva. And a bodhisattva waits for the whole planet to get enlightened, including the most difficult people, including the soul of Hitler and Mussolini, whatever. And then I will be the one turning off the light on planet Earth, saying goodbye, we finished here, let's go to the next level. Because that, I think, is what spirituality is really all about.
Yes. And you know, a lot of times people, you know, it's funny because when I died in the hospital and I went to the other side and I got to like visit family and friends and I got to fly, I got to swim. I love the realm of light because everything you can imagine that's fun is there to do. But what was interesting was at one point I stopped and I said, I need to go back. And they said, you know, do you want your memories erased or do you want full memory? And you know, you don't have to go back. You can stay if you want to. It's your choice. And I said, I can't leave that planet the way it is. If everyone is not ascending, then I will be the one holding the door open for the last person to step through. So if that's what it takes, then that's what I'll do. And they're like, you're going to go back in pain. You're going to have this thing happen to you, that thing happen to you. And literally, when I came back, I was induced in a coma for 2 months. And then after, I was in a wheelchair for almost 2 years. And the only way the spirit told me to get my legs back was book 22 in the Kabbalah. And they told me to get the book from my friend who was and take it home and scan it every day. And I kept scanning it and scanning it, and I started feeling these light threads moving through my body. And then the angels showed me how to move the threads to the right position to get my brain to function again, because I had brain damage. I couldn't use my hands. I couldn't eat. I couldn't do anything. And when I put the threads in the right position, all of a sudden, the doctors were like, oh my God, your brain is recovered, you know, and it, and all of these different levels. And what I thought was fascinating was everyone always asked me, like, why didn't you stay? Why did you stay if it was so beautiful? And I couldn't, because I felt, you know, why would I want to stay here when my brothers and sisters are still trapped in darkness? And I want them to come home. So I came to Earth for Operation Planet Lift, not Operation Durek Lift, you know?
Or escape.
Or escape, escape, right. And even like you said, when I've done my, you know, my LSD days and all of those different things, I never thought for once that any of those things that I did made me enlightened. And I see such a subculture of people doing ayahuasca and doing all these plant medicines, and then they're coming out and thinking that they're the enlightened beings. And I'm going, you haven't integrated even 10% of what you actually experience from what you can even perceive what you experience versus that. Do you think there's something to do with that, with what's happening on the planet? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that things are quickened. One reason is also we are 8.1 billion people. All these people have will. All these people have intention, fears, hopes, creativity, imagination. So, of course, things are moving much faster. It's like these atoms are banging against each other. But also, according to astrology, at least, that traces time, we are entering the age of Aquarius, which is the age of enlightenment. So the next 2,000 years is supposed to be the time that we kind of get it, you know, even though Aquarius also rules aliens. So it could be also that, you know, where some connection that comes from above. But the idea is that this is a time where things are, like you said, we're lucky to be born around this time because there's a lot of movement, a lot of changes that are going to be happening. They're already starting, but they're accelerating. Accelerating not only because of technology innovation, which, by the way, is ruled by Aquarius as well, but also because we are ready for it. You know, we're ready for artificial intelligence. Otherwise, it wouldn't come. We were ready for the internet. Otherwise, it wouldn't come.
Right.
So my feeling is that what's happening now with the world, from being, you know, two heads like the Soviet Union and United States, into many, many centers. I think that decentralization is going to start happening. Going to have little centers there everywhere, you know, and not, I don't see it so much as blocks. Blocks belong to the former age, you know. Yeah, I think there's going to be something different. But there's going to be turmoil. There's going to be a lot of death. There's going to be a lot of pain. Unfortunately, whenever you move from one phase to the other, even when you change gear in your car, you have to hit the clutch. If you remember how to, you know, the gear driving, and it makes changes. Every time you do something, there is change. There is death and resurrection. So there is going to be a lot of turmoil in the next few years. I think that people ask me, you know, how is this year? I'm saying, how is this decade difficult?
Right. Right. Absolutely. I say the same thing. I wrote a book on it. I call it the blackout. The spirit told me there's going to be like 15 years of the blackout. And that's the time where people are either going to either be self-sustainable and maintained through the blackout, or people are going to want to leave the planet.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Wow. I mean, I love talking to you. I could go on forever. And how can people, I mean, I'm going to be setting up an appointment like ASAP, but how can people set an appointment with you, get your book? Like, tell us, how can we be a part of your offerings?
So my website is Cosmic Navigator. It's easy to remember. Okay. And every Sunday, I give a free class at 10 o'clock Los Angeles time that they can join through live Instagram, which is Cosmic_Navigator. Also on TikTok is Cosmic_Navigator. And my book is there on the website. So Cosmic Navigator is the easier. But if they Google me, I think, I don't know a lot of gals. So it will probably come up, the website. The book.
Yes, of course. Well, I'm going to be making an appointment with you soon. You are absolutely wonderful and amazing. And
thank you.
connected. And I'm so honored to be in your presence of such a wonderful man who is so talented and so spirited and just has ability to not just be able to see so much, but also to see the in-between. And that's a gift in itself. And so I'm just really grateful. And I'll be making an appointment with you soon because I want to be able to have some private time with you.
Well, and, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you for coming on this podcast. We, you know, people all over the world are going to be listening. We have people in Kuwait. We have people in Africa, people in the Philippines. We have a little village in the Philippines that actually listens to the podcast through one computer in the whole village. Oh. So people are really going to love this episode. And I'm just really happy
thank you.
That we had you.
Well, thanks a lot for making the time and happy Mazal Tov. You know, Mazal Tov, when everybody says Mazal Tov. Mazal Tov, people think it means good luck. It does. But really what it means, Mazal in Hebrew means constellation. Mm-hmm. So when you say Mazal Tov, even if something breaks, you're just trying to say, even if it broke, there's a good constellation that was shining on you. The constellation made it happen. So if your birthday, may you have a good constellation, because the word constellation in Hebrew is from the same root as liquid, as to flow, as to leak into. So it's as if the wisdom ours, or the wisdom of the constellation, kind of leaks into our life and help us flow, you know.
Yes, yes.
So Mazal Tov to your wedding.
And, yeah, Mazal Tov. I always say Mazal Tov when we have the weddings and my Jewish get married. I go Mazal Tov.
Yeah,
yeah. So I love the Hebrew language. It's you know, it makes me very happy.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I did, there was a period when I used to go to Santeria quite a lot, and that's where I met Yemaya. I have Oshun in my garden, and I have Oya.
Wow.
And Obatala, yeah, and I have Ojun, the one with the hammer.
Uh-huh.
He's in the front.
Yeah.
Ogun. Ojun.
My crown when I was born is Shango and Yamaja.
Yeah. So Shango, of course, Santa Barbara, you know. So yeah, I was fascinated by this tradition.
Yeah, I love it. I love the tradition. And you know what's really interesting is one time I was in a trance. And Yamaya brought me to the ocean and she drew the constellations in the water. And she was moving me through the constellations in the water and telling me that I'm always going to be protected by all of the constellations. And I woke up and she had the Virgo constellation in front of me. And then my fiance happens to be a Virgo. It's absolutely, and she's the most grounding, powerhouse woman, loving, amazing person. Oh, I don't know if I did a closing out for the podcast. No, I didn't. So let me do one right now so that, so they can move the audio to where it needs to be when they do the thing. So I'm just so excited, Gal, that you are here with us and everyone is going to benefit greatly from all the wisdom that you have. And I just want to say thank you so much for being such a powerful man with great vision and the ability to have a heart of gold to share your knowledge and wisdom with us today on the Ancient Wisdom Today podcast.
Well, thanks a lot for having me and have an amazing year.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Ancient Wisdom Today podcast. Tribe, I love you all so much. And if you want to stay connected, be sure to check me out on IG at Shaman Durek. And if you have any questions whatsoever, please visit shamandurek.com or contact info@shamandurek.com to learn more. And remember, tribe, no matter what, stay lit.